Well, my title is The Only Way is Ethics. Ethics is to do with how we behave in regard to what we say or think or believe is right and wrong, morals, if you like. The Bible's got a lot to say about ethics and morals, right and wrong. Don't lie. Be kind to your neighbour. Pay your taxes. Look after widows. Bring up children well. Don't show favouritism. Care about the poor. Don't use people. Don't casually curse people and so on. You know, there's lots in the Bible about morals, about right and wrong. And every government, there's a bit about government on the screen there, every government has a list of rights and wrongs. And they reinforce those rights and wrongs with what Romans 13 calls the sword, the punishment that they can dish out. I read last week, I don't know if you read it, that the residents of Amsterdam, anybody ever been to Amsterdam? I have. I went with some mates to the red light about 40-odd years ago. Well, some residents of Amsterdam had complained that after dark, their city is impossible to police. It's not safe. So there are some people, we're assuming that all the residents of Amsterdam are not all Christians, so you're these people, perhaps none of them are Christians, and they are saying it's wrong what's going on in our city. So they got a sense of right and wrong. Some weeks ago, I don't know if you saw it in the newspaper, that some women had invaded a swimming pool in London that was all male, and they went there. They weren't protesting that it was all male. They were protesting about this. They were trying to make the lawmakers think. They were protesting that they could just turn up and identify as men that day. So they were complaining about. They were saying, we've chosen to identify as men today. In other words, the legal people, the legal eagles, the lawmakers need to think about this. They were making a point. Now, some years ago in the 18th century, there was a fellow called Immanuel Kant. Very clever guy. And he rejected the most popular proofs for the existence of God. Now, I found some this morning. I used to use this thing donkeys years ago, all those things on the screen there. I used to use them years ago, but one is missing. I only found a few of them this morning, and then I found a few more, but there was one missing. And this is basically what I would take to colleges and schools and stuff years ago. It's basically, there's the blue blob, there's this beautiful planet we saw in 1969 when they went on the moon and they took a photo. You know, it's beautiful, who put it there? Then the eye, which is missing, there's an inbuilt sense of worship. We all desire to worship somebody, whether we worship in rock stars or the true God or some totem pole somewhere. Then we're bothered by right and wrong, fair unfairness. Then life is an amazing thing. Then the presence of evil, where did it come from? Then we are scared of death. Everybody is scared of dying. Then we got animals and plants. Animals, we take in this oxygen, we chuck out this toxic carbon dioxide. The plants lap up the carbon dioxide. They can't get enough of it, and they chuck out the oxygen. And so we got this wonderful sharing of the life forms on the planet. Then we got you and me. You're amazing. Idris often says we're fearfully and wonderfully made. You and me are amazing. Then we got this man, Jesus. He claimed to be a savior. And then the whole thing, almost in my case today, spells out Bible says. We got this book, the Bible, that makes extraordinary claims. But I would say, whenever you're talking to somebody who doesn't believe, or they're from another religion, or whatever it is, I think in most cases, for me, I would start with creation. If somebody can't see a design in you and me and nature, if they can't see the cause and effect demands that somebody created, then, and if they go on to say that life can spontaneously happen and that kind of thing, they're not short-sighted. They are deliberately sitting there with their eyes tightly shut with a blindfold on. Anyway, Immanuel Kant, this is what he said. He said that there may be a God. He said there were these two realms, or two rooms, if you like. There may be a God, and other things as well, but spiritual realm, if you like, the supernatural realm, whatever. There may be a God, and he's in that realm, if he's there. But we're in this other realm, and between us is a brick wall. And his argument has been summed up, you can't get to there from here. You can't think. If you think, you can say, well, that looks like design, but you can't prove it, see? So he would say, all my arguments about those kind of things. He'd say, yeah, they're very interesting, fascinating arguments, but you can't prove, you can't get from here through the brick wall to there. There may be a God there, but you can't prove it. You can't get through the wall. That was his argument. So having solidly bricked up the wall, if you like, he then said, but, and this is where the contradiction of a clever fella, but he said, you've got to have ethics. You've got to have right and wrong. The only way is ethics. You can't have society without it. So, because Kant was a clever guy and a thinker, he said, he wanted peace in his native land, Prussia, Germany, whatever you want to call it. He wanted peace there, but he wanted peace everywhere. But his problem was, he said, but the trouble is, it's a bad world. There are nasty people. There's wars. There's internal strife in every country. The government has to come up with punishments, laws, because people can't be trusted. There are people, then he goes on to say, but then there are people who are wicked and they prosper. Even though there's a government that's got laws and punishments, crime pays sometimes. So here's Kant, this thinking guy, saying, you can't get from here through the wall to God. You can't ever know for certain he's there. But, he says, in order for ethics to work, and ethics must work, the policeman must be able to say, you were doing 50 in a 30 limit. You can say, hey, no problem, mate. There are no rules, there are no laws. The policeman would say, well, I actually think the government says you can't do 30, more than 30 there. So because of Kant's thinking of the wicked do prosper, he says, therefore, there must be an afterlife. You must survive the grave. Otherwise, ethics is meaningless. Are you with me? You've got to think this morning. I know it's not always as hard as this, is it? But you've got to think of me this morning, right? So, he says, so therefore, for ethics to be meaningful, you've got to survive the grave. But not only that, you've got to survive the grave, and we all got to be brought to account. Not only that, there must therefore be a judge to bring us to account. But Kant knew full well that some judges are useless. So he said, but the judge must not only bring us to account, he's got to be a perfect judge. He's got to be a good judge. Not only must he be a good and perfect judge, he must know all the facts. Not enough for Kant, he still hasn't finished. Not only must he be a perfect judge, a good judge, and bring us to account and know all the facts, he must have the power to punish. In other words, here's this brilliant man saying, you can't get to there from here. You can't argue there's a God, there's a brick wall, and there's no front door. But what Kant has to do is sneak around the back and make a side door. And he then says, even though you can't prove there's a God, you can't get to there from here, you've got to live as if there is. Otherwise, ethics is impossible. You have to live as if there's a God, even though there might not be. Even though there probably isn't. You've got to live as if there's one. So his argument, pure reason, no, you can't prove there's a God. Practically, you've got to live as if he's there. What a contradiction for a clever fella. You can't know he's there, but you've got to live as if he is. And of course, the Bible says, well, actually, you can know he's there. And you can know he's there, Romans 1, because he's made it obvious. God has made it obvious. And to not believe, you have to deliberately suppress the truth. You have to suffocate all the evidence that's there. What may be known about God is plain, because God has made it plain. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, eternal power, divine nature, have been clearly seen, been understood from what has been made. You, me, creation, the swallows, the sterling that I'd never heard of before, the sun. We just look. That is enough. So that we are without excuse. but Romans 1 goes on. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools. Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 1, Paul argues, where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? In what sense? Well, Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God. They're there. Oh, no, says the atheist. It looks like design. And it looks very much like design, but it's not designed. It just looks like it. But, of course, the Bible goes further. Not just the heavens declare the glory of God. Ecclesiastes 3, God has set eternity in your heart. He hasn't just put external evidence. Inside you, you know it. You know he's there. That's why to be an atheist, you have to be determined. I was one for a long time, I know, to my shame. You have to be determined to say, I'm not listening, I'm not looking at the evidence, I'm not interested, no thank you. You have to suppress the truth. You have to suppress all those thoughts. That's why, you know, we know there's a God, Ecclesiastes 3. We know God is there and we try to dismiss him. That's why at funerals, people talk about everything and anything except what's happened. You can have these big strapping fellas. I used to go to funerals with all these rugby playing types. They'd all stand outside reeking the booze already because they'd all been tanked up before we got to the funeral. And we talk about anything, but never talk about what has happened here. A man has died. Where's he gone? Never heard it. Never even talked about the fact that he had died. Talk about anything else and silly little jokes. Because we know God is there. Psalm 50, our God comes and will not be silent. Immanuel Kant thought there was a brick wall. God has provided a door. Jesus said, I am the door. So we got conscience, we got the inbuilt sense, we got all those things on the board, and the thing that should be on the board that I couldn't find. We got all that. And then we got Paul preaching in Acts and saying to Agrippa and Festus, and you know, none of this was done in a corner. You know about it, he's saying. God's made it clear. So the people you meet, if they believe, or they say they believe, what do they believe? It's worth asking people. And if you meet people who say, no, I don't believe, well, what don't you believe? What exactly don't you believe? You know, when somebody said to me years ago, I don't believe in God, well, what do you mean by that? What exactly don't you believe? Well, I don't believe that we'll be sitting in baggy nighties floating on a cloud. Well, neither do I. Let's agree on that then. I read a non-Christian scientist years ago. This is what he said. What we observe today, what were you, maths or science? Maths? Maths and chemistry, yeah. Chemistry is a bit like science. Not the physics is the real thing, but it's close, you know. Anyway, no, sorry, right. So what this scientist said, what would we observe today we can be certain of? What we can say about the immediate past, what happened recently, we can still be fairly confident. What can we say about the distant past? We can only speculate. And then he said this, what can we say about the origin, the beginning? Science can say nothing. Now, there's a scientist saying, we've observed this today. Look, this is what happened. Well, yesterday or last week or last year, we got a pretty good idea. We're still fairly confident. What happened a long time ago, we're guessing. When it comes to the origin, the beginning, we can't say anything. Right? Are you with me so far? You notice, though, what's the anti-God propaganda today? It turns that upside down. It says we know what happened at the start. We know, even though our life began. Science can't do that. Not true science. That's fibbing. That's worse than guesswork. When I bumped into the former colleague some 18 months ago, whatever it was, and the first thing his wife asked me was, still with God, are you? And he arrived on the scene just as she'd asked me that. And I just said, yeah, I am. I look at myself, I look at the world, nothing else makes sense. And even he said, that's a good point. Now, why am I preaching this morning? Does it make sense to you? What do you make of the world when you look at the world? You know, Immanuel Kant and the Huxley brothers, they believed you had to live a lie. You had to live. You've got to live as if God's there, even though the Huxleys went much further and said, God is definitely not there, but you've got to live as if he is. Otherwise, there's no right and wrong, no morals. Are you living a lie? Do you say, oh, I believe, but what do you believe? See, there are two reasons I'm preaching this. One, so that you will know what you believe and see the world as the Bible sees the world. And secondly, that you will know how they think, the poor dabs who are lost that we meet, who are hurtling to hell, and you'll be able to communicate with them. Because God has decided to make himself known. We sing at Christmas, don't we? He came down to earth from heaven, who is God and Lord of all. He's come here. Have you trusted him? Luke 19, verse 10, the Son of Man came to seek and to save. Here's the wonderful thing. It's not a wall here where we have to try and think big thoughts to jump over the wall. No. He's come through the wall. He's come down. You know, I remember I did a camp in the early 90s with 16, 17, 18-year-old boys and girls too. But I remember there was a group of about, 12 or 14 boys playing football on the tarmac. And I went out with this boy, Jason. He wasn't playing, and when he got to see the game going on, he just shouted, "Can I play?" And the game carried on. See, they're still playing on the tarmac there. And Ben, one of the blokes, shouts, "Jace, you're on our team, boy." So on he goes. As he goes on, somebody's kicked the ball high. As he goes on, the ball, the first thing that happened, it fell right at his feet. He volleyed it, right foot, right in the goals. And then three voices shouted, "Wrong way, Jace." Well, he didn't know. He'd just come on the pitch. But what was wonderful was about 2 or 3 days later, he stood up, Jason, and he said, "I realized I've been playing the wrong way all my life regarding Jesus." Are you still playing the wrong way? Some of you are. You're playing the wrong way. And that young fella turned to Jesus right there and then and was saved, converted, born again, on his way to heaven. Now a child of the living God. Where are you in all this? Amen. Oh, let's sing this. In 1904, they only had to start singing this, and people would have been on the floor weeping, just amazed at the cross. Let's sing.